Good afternoon. My name is Aaron Lurie. I'm the Director of Professional Learning here at NAESP, and it is National Principals Month. Boy, do I have a treat for you today. I have a phenomenal speaker that I had an opportunity to meet at our 2018 Pre-K to 8 Principals Conference in Orlando. His name is Dr. Raymond J. McNulty. Mr. McNulty, welcome to our NAESP headquarters.
Thanks, Aaron. It's great to be here. And this is kind of nice because they can't see us, but we're getting to hang out at headquarters here today. It's kind of fun.
Yes, I'm usually doing the webinars here alone, but today I have a special guest. Again, tell us a little bit about yourself, Dr. McNulty.
So for those of you that don't know me, I've been in education for quite some time. I won't say when, but decades. Started as an elementary teacher and a principal superintendent, commissioner of education in Vermont. Left the commissioner's position to work at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for a few years. And that's where I, when I left there, I went to work for Bill Daggett. Many of you might know Bill Daggett in the International Center for Leadership and Education. I became the president of that organization. Spent 15 years. I still work with Bill today, but left the center to learn a little bit more about the online world. So I went to work for an online institution called Penn Foster. Left there to become the dean at the School of Education at Southern New Hampshire University, which was named the 12th most innovative company in the world as a private nonprofit company. And just recently left there to become the president of the Successful Practices Network, which Bill Daggett chairs. It's a private nonprofit. And also to lead the National Dropout Prevention Center, which we acquired recently. Been a member of NAESP. I was president of ASCD at the national level, and thrilled to be able to share some of my work with you today.
Well, congratulations on your promotion there.
Yeah.
Today, Dr. McNulty is going to talk about leading in tough times. That's our subject for today, and this is our first installment of our National Principals Month webinar series. I hope you'll join us for the next one. But again, give your attention to Dr. McNulty.
So just to let you all know that during this webinar, if you have any questions, if you put those questions in the question box as we get near the end at about 2:45, one of the professionals here at NAESP will read some of the questions. I'll answer them. You see on the opening page my email address and also my Twitter handle. Appreciate you tweeting out if you'd like. Send me an email if you're interested in just talking. You have a question, you have a concern. My whole focus of my work is to help educators really transform education. So let me get started with my presentation. So we're going to go to about 2:45 and then take questions. But I have a way of talking about this. So leading in tough times, why am I advancing right now is one question. So let's hold on a second. We were just advancing very easily before. Let's see. No drawing tool, normal. Let me go back here. Click on that. Let's see. We're frozen. Honor is coming in to help. Let's see. We just tested it. Mm-hmm. It was working. I did the down arrow. Okay, we'll see. So this is the first technical glitch. Hopefully the only one. As we begin, I know all of you, this is kind of just my way of kind of laying out the issues. You make a plan, and it's instituted looking something like this. There's never a plan that you implement that looks like that top picture. No matter what the plan is in your system, it's going to look like that bottom one. Tough leading in tough times, I'm not sure when it never was tough times. I've been in school since 1973, and I'm not sure I've seen anything that looks like that first one. So I just want you to think about that. And I also want you to think about the topic today, leading in tough times. I think it's always tough for us in education. But here's how I've designed this webinar. The first two topics, those of you that have ever heard me talk, I like to give you an agenda. So my agenda is I'm going to talk, well, other than saying welcome to the new world today, I want to talk a little bit about what that world looks like today, then what the future looks like. I'm going to try to do that pretty quickly. And then I want to get to talking about strategies to use now. I want to give you some tools, some ways of thinking about the work that you do. And then I just have one final point to talk about leadership today. Then we'll answer some questions. That's how we're going to fly, and let's get started. So here we go. Welcome to the world today. So one of the things I think we all need to understand about our field, education. Education, Dewey said this a long time ago, but he said education is not preparation for life. Education is life itself. Even more so today. I want everybody out there to understand that education, as far as I work with a lot of futurists, education has become the economy of the future. It is the economy of the future. It's not knowledge that you have. It's education. It's continuing to acquire knowledge. And I want you to think about that because we're living in a really crazy world. So I'm not sure if you all out there would agree with me, but I'm going to suggest that you may. Would you agree with me that the pace of change is amazingly fast today? You can't respond. I just want you to think about it. My guess is you're going, like, just like I am. Absolutely. Change happens too quickly. Well, get this. The pace of change today, the day you just either started it or ended, will be the slowest it'll be for the rest of your life. Change will just continue to get faster and faster. It's something we need to deal with. And when we layer that speed of change on top of the aim of education, so the work that you're doing in your schools, we have to really understand. So the aim of education is really not to have our kids do well in school. It's really to have them do well in the lives they lead outside of school. And if you think about the pace of change on the outside, if we don't keep up with that, we're not doing our job. We're not preparing the kids for where they need to go. And here's where I introduce you, many of you, to a very new word. And this word comes from a group of futurists in Palo Alto, and here's the way we look at the world today. We live in what's called a VUCA world. Yes, VUCA. And so what does VUCA mean? VUCA stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And you'll see that if you go online, as you're listening to me and you Google VUCA world, you'll hear that, first of all, this word came from the military. It was during the Afghanistan and Iraq war, they started talking about we're living in a VUCA world. Now, this has nothing to do with the song Living La Vida VUCA, right? This has got to do with the future. And the Institute for the Future has adopted this term as well. Just think about the Afghan-Iraq war. They didn't know who their enemy was. They didn't know who their friends were. It's constantly changing. That's the life of an elementary school principal. That's the life of anybody in education today. The field of education is volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And I'm going to bet that none of you were trained, any of you out there were trained to live in that kind of an environment. See, many of us have been raised in a context that the world is predictable. We all were. That we now need to work with a different mindset. One of the reasons we're so stressed out is we're thinking the world is predictable. It's not. As a matter of fact, you all know this. Pick the paper up any day. Look at the headlines. So when you think about this kind of a world, the best leadership advice I can give you is something that sounds crazy, but be very clear about where you are going, but be very flexible about how to get there. Avoid certainty, but seek clarity. This kind of sounds like an oxymoron to some of you, but this is the fact. You need to have a clear focus of what you're doing and where you're going, but a level of uncertainty about how you're going to get there. You need to be incredibly flexible. This is not something people in education like, but that's the way we're going to be. So be clear about what you do, and this is the problem. And if you don't remember anything about my talk today, I'd like you to pay attention to the next few slides, because I'm really convinced the future of education rests And believe it or not, it rests on these next couple of slides. It's kind of funny to me to say that. But I think in education, we've made a serious mistake. And the way I'm going to share this mistake with you is I'm going to give you an example of the mistake, and then I'll tell you the mistake that we've made. Now, many of you, I spent a lot of my career in Vermont, and in Vermont, I'm going to talk about ICE. Now, what does ICE have to do with education? Well, nothing really, but it's an example of what I want to share with you. If you look at that picture there, and you see, I think you can all see my cursor, before refrigerators, the way we were able to get ice is that they actually cut it in the winter, stored it, and it was delivered by icemen all year long. They packed it in sawdust. These people defined their work as making ice. They would cut ice. That was their job. We cut ice. These people were not the people that invented this thing, which is the ice factory. These people defined their job as manufacturing ice. These people were not the people that invented this, the refrigerator. What I want you to think about is these people, they defined their job as cutting ice. They couldn't make this because these people defined their job as manufacturing ice. They missed out on what they were providing versus what they did. They defined themselves by what they provided, not what they did. If they thought about what they provided, ways to keep something cool, they could have invented this refrigerator, but they didn't. And that's a serious problem. See, the mistake we made is when we define ourselves by what we do rather than what we provide, we limit our ability to innovate. So you shouldn't be defining yourself by what you do. So let me ask the question. What business are we in education? What is our business? If you have a piece of paper in front of you, write down what you think it is. I do this with educators and leadership all the time. Well, here's the answer. We're in the learning business. But here's the problem. We define ourselves. I walk into buildings all the time. We teach. That's what we do. That's like the ice cutters. That's like the ice manufacturers. And the issue really becomes we're about learning. We are not about teaching. Teaching is only one way to define the work we do. All right? It's only one way. It's not the only way to achieve learning. And that's different from even 20 years ago or 15 years ago in education. So we have to understand that our job is about learning. And learning has expanded at a rate that has far outpaced our conceptions of teaching. It is very different. You can learn lots of ways without the act of teaching going on. Is your school ready to recognize learning that happens all over the place? You see, thinking about this whole idea of a leadership mindset in the VUCA world, in a VUCA world we need to focus on what is possible rather than what is likely to occur. This doesn't really please our brain. Right? What is possible? There's lots of things possible when we think about the learning business versus the teaching business. So what I want to do is I want to share 7 leadership factors with you right now that kind of help us think about how you as a leader need to think in a VUCA world, in an environment where we're moving from teaching to a learning situation. So the first is this. Always have a clear vision against which judgments can be made with an agility to respond to the rapidly changing situations. We all need in every institution a very clear vision and very clear and very specific about where, with great clarity, where you're going to go. You need to have that so you can make judgments. And because what's going to happen is things are going to change all the time. You have to match your thinking against this very, very clear vision. 2 is you need to build a culture of change. I suggested to you that the pace of change is slowest for the rest of your life will be today. That means more change tomorrow, more the next day. And our organizations are really not equipped to be a culture of change, to have a culture of change in them. And we have got to embrace that, which really means we need to understand and be ready to leave the status quo. And I know as many of you, as a former superintendent, I just remember as a principal trying to change a teacher's room. I mean, it was like if I needed to relocate somebody, that was difficult, let alone, you know, what we're talking about today. We need to have a sense of being curious, and we have to be able to seize the chance to innovate. Uncertain times bring all kinds of opportunities for bold moves. We are not a profession that's seen as being bold. We are a profession that's seen as being very conservative. We really can't be that in a VUCA world. The fourth is encourage networks rather than hierarchies. Collaboration yields more than competition. If I could suggest, I mean, I was talking to the executive director just now, Earl Franks, and he was talking about collaborating with AAS and collaborating with NAESB. Organizations have to collaborate, not compete. So if you're an elementary school principal and there is a charter school in the neighborhood, there is a religious school, we ought to be talking with them. Collaboration will yield a better result for all of us. We need to work together. It should not be an us against them environment in the world of education. And it is. I can tell you it is. I've worked on both sides of this issue, and we need to understand. I live and breathe public education. I live and breathe it. But I also see a great advantage of collaborating with all types of schools. So that's important. Number five is never lose focus on educator and student engagement. Allow groups the freedom they need to innovate new ideas, systems, and services. We need to encourage and embrace our educators that have ideas, that want to innovate. And if we had a lot of time, I'd talk about innovation strategies for schools. I'm doing some work on that now. I can offer some thoughts if we get to the Q&A period on that. But let me just say to you, it should be as exciting to walk into a school as it is to walk into the Google headquarters. That's the kind of environment you need to embrace as a school leader today. Number six is get used to being uncomfortable. Resist the change and to resist the concept of clinging to the way systems are and how they work today. Here's the thing. Most schools today are forward-focused and not future-focused. Forward-focused means you look back at what you did and you add one thing to it. Right? That's just moving the system one. Future-focused is looking ahead, looking at where the future is. And by the way, the future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. It's all over the place, and you can see it. You can see those pieces of the future all around us. Seven is hierarchies are often, they cripple decision-making in a VUCA world. Success depends on distributed leadership. So let me give you a look at what distributed leadership looks like. In most schools, we look at hierarchies. You know, principal, teacher, principal, assistant, principal, teacher, superintendent, associate, superintendent. You can lay out the hierarchies. What you see here, and I apologize for bleeding off the screen, it's not as important down below, but this is what an organizational chart might look like in the future. What it is, it's flat. And as different issues rise up, different people assume the role of leadership. There's no center, no higher authority. So there may be a reading issue going on in the system where your reading person is the ultimate authority on what the decision on leading that issue. Maybe a teacher who has got a particular interest in something. It's not all, you always don't look to the principal or the assistant principal or the superintendent or somebody, but it moves around. Organizations need to be what is called shape-shifting organizations. They grow from the edges, hierarchies come and go, and they can't be over-controlled by one individual. That's a look, really quick look at what we're talking about from this perspective. So that leads us to a quick look at the future. So I'm a futurist buff by trade, so let me lay out a little bit of a look to the future to get you to understand this challenge that you're leading in tough times. So there is a lot of issues shaping education. There's three I'm going to talk about very quickly. The proliferation of intelligent systems. You all know this. Artificial intelligence is getting smarter and better. The emergence of what's called futures literacy, which is we as educators should be doing what Elon Musk, but all the leaders of big corporations are, and they're looking to the future. They look to the future for their answers. They don't look to the past. And the third one is an important one for all educators to understand, is human-machine collaboration to learn. This is absolutely going to happen. It's happening now. We need to get comfortable with it. So if you think about artificial intelligence, it's becoming really good at human tasks. It diagnoses diseases, translating languages, provides great customer service in many cases. It's getting better absolutely each and every day. Never before have digital tools been so responsive to us. As you're sitting there right now, I'm sure you have your phone sitting next to you. That is the tool that helps you live and get through a day sometimes, because it manages so much of what you do. So with artificial intelligence, will alter how work gets done and who does it, the technology's larger impact will be on complementing and augmenting human capabilities, not replacing them. This, just think about a teacher and a machine working to educate a student. I think that's a very powerful piece of this work. See, technology won't replace teachers, but teachers who use technology will replace teachers who do not. So I've got a minute, 30-second video I'm going to play. I'm going to share with you something you might have seen on 60 Minutes. This is a look at the future. You're going to get a gentleman who's talking about he's developed a machine that, as you think in your head, it picks up that signal from your brain. No, you don't even have to say anything. It picks up the signal, and it connects his own brain to the Internet and can come up with answers. This was just on 60 Minutes not too long ago. Here you go.
This is when you're reading or when you're talking to yourself, your brain transmits electrical signals to your vocal cords. You can actually pick these signals up, and you can get certain clues as to what the person intends to speak.
So the brain is sending an electrical signal for a word that you would normally speak, but your device is intercepting that signal. And so instead of speaking the word, your device is sending it into a computer.
That's correct.
That's unbelievable. Let's see how this goes. We've tried it. One is 45,689 divided by 67.
Sure.
He silently asked the computer, and then hears the answer through vibrations transmitted through his skull and into his inner ear.
6, 8, 1, 4, 9, 2, 5.
Exactly right. One more. What's the largest city in Bulgaria, and what is the population? The screen shows how long it takes the computer to read the words that he's saying to himself.
Sophia, 1.1 million?
That is correct. You just Googled that.
I did.
You could be an expert in any subject. You have the entire Internet in your head.
That's the idea.
So if you think about that, just think about education in the future, the work that we do. So technology can't do everything humans can. Technology is really good at convergent thinking. Excellent at it. Better than we are. It's not good at divergent thinking. You can ask the computer a question, but you, as a human, the value is divergent thinking. Now, where do we spend most of our time in our classroom? Really, we've analyzed that we spend more time convergent thinking with our kids in the classroom. Just think about that. All right? So think this, just get this picture in your head. Content moderation. Consider Facebook. They're hiring thousands and thousands of humans. Twitter, thousands and thousands of humans. Why? Because, as I said on the screen, technology can't understand if a user is posting a racist review or describing a racist behavior. Technology can correct the grammar, but it can't make that connection. That's the deep work that teachers and educators have to embrace in our schools. And we're racing around doing things that we shouldn't be. Now, I'm going to show you another video. I'm just going to play it for a minute just to give you a sense of it, because I want to make a point with you all. So I'm going to show you, the next video I'm going to show you is me. You won't see me. I'm driving. I have a brand new, it's almost 2 months old, a Tesla 3 with self-driving, and I'm on the road, and I'm letting the car drive by itself, all right? And I just want you to take a look at it, and then I want to make a connection to this educator-machine collaboration, human-machine collaboration, which I think is important for us to understand. And if you're a school leader, you must understand. So you'll hear me babbling. I wish I could turn the sound down. So this is me and my Tesla. I haven't set it 78.
Caught up with this truck, and it slowed itself down. It stays in the lane, it stays behind.
You need to know I'm not steering. I'm just sitting there, and it's going.
It's steering itself, and it's staying right.
It's going to keep three car lengths in front of me, and it will keep me on the road.
Going uphill, slowed down to 69. And,
I did this for another group, but you see the radar picking up the other cars around it on the bottom. And that's, so here's what you need to know. I love to drive, right? But I was letting the machine do it a little bit because I wanted to figure it out. It's a little scary. Teachers love to teach. I'm not sure they're willing to give up some teaching. They love to focus on teaching. And I love to drive. And I think there's this challenge we have in education. Because there, you know, here's the thing. We're not going to displace them. The research is clear. You get short-term results when you try to replace. But look at this. Most significant performance gain is when there is human-machine collaboration. When I'm going on a long drive in my Tesla, I actually can let the car drive a little bit, right? It gives me a little chance to relax, right? Just think about that as teachers. They're a busy day. They should be letting the technology take over some of the convergent thinking, some of the skill acquisition. We need to start to think about that. Here's the point. Humans and artificial intelligence each can work together and they can complement their skills. Humans are better at leadership, teamwork, creativity, all the social skills that kids need, divergent thinking. Machines are better at speed, accuracy, replication, data collection, scalability, lots of things. See, technology is not, humans are better at telling a joke than a machine, right? But machines are better at some things. We've got to understand we're fighting something that we need to embrace very soon. And that is this human-machine collaboration. Because here's the reason why. Successful learning in the future will require both. Just think of, I think about the program Achieve 3000 I was telling somebody earlier. If that's dealing with skill acquisition, I as the teacher have a great chance to get to know the student really well, understand their life's challenges, embrace them, give them some of that divergent thinking that they need. I don't have to worry about other things. That's how we have to look. So let me now make the break. Hopefully you're right around 2:30. Great. I want to share some strategies for this VUCA world. So the first two topics were about what's the world like and what's the future going to be like. Kind of crazy, not getting slower. It's not going to allow you to take a break. It's going to get faster and faster. So what are some strategies you need to understand to live and work successfully in this environment? So I want you first to understand something called the Gartner Hype Curve. Get a little briefly technical, but I'm going to show you two Gartner Hype Curve on the screen. So this is the Gartner Hype Curve, and on the bottom, you'll see I'm going to use this example. This is in 2012, at the university level, they launched MOOCs, Massive Open Online Courses for Free. All of a sudden, the hype went up high. If you see up top, it took the peak of inflated expectations. Oh, this is going to be the end of the world, this stuff. And then you get into this trough of disillusionment, which is, we're not seeing that many of those open, massive, free courses, right? But now what happens is you start to get to what's called the slope of enlightenment and the plateau of productivity. This is what happens when you get these big boosts. So I want you not to be afraid of big things. Like those of you that were around when we started the first cell phones, it's like, wow, cell phones, you can talk everywhere. Nah, nobody's going to want them. Trump of disillusionment. Oh, now what? Everyone's got it, right? So understand that this is what happens with the hype. Usually a year or two of excessive hype, then you get into the trough of disillusionment, and then it starts to pick up. So don't respond to all of the hypes that occur every time. You need to understand that. The other thing you need to understand is that as a leader, in the VUCA world, you need to be concerned with two types of performance. this is what the two are. You need to be concerned with tactical performance, which is this side, and adaptive performance. Let me give you a sense of what this looks like. So in the past, we would talk about operating excellence. Do what you're already doing even better. This side here, this is the tactical performance, delivering on your mission. Okay? The other side, this side over here, how to invent a different future, that's adaptive performance. How are you adapting? So you as a leader need to work in this zone in the middle here. You've got to be doing some of these things in the future. Another way to look at it, I refer to it if you follow any of my articles that I've written, this one side is best practices, the other side is next practices. And what happens is you launch a best practice in your school, you tinker with next practices, and eventually the next practice becomes the best practice, and the system keeps moving on. Now that's kind of a, let me give you a, the difficulty here is though, we do not accept next practices very well. So I want to show you what that looks like, give you this strategy. This is the strategy of disruptive innovation. So let's pretend we're at a faculty meeting. Here's your school. And I ask a question to the faculty about how can we improve student performance. And somebody gives me this idea. Here's what we do. We take our school and we stick our idea in it. But you can see the idea doesn't really fit the school. So here's what we do in public education. We take that idea and we make the idea fit our school. We just squeeze all of the richness of the idea out and make it fit into our everyday. Maybe I said something like, let's let kids use technology all the time, right? Because that's what the real world does outside. Your boss doesn't tell you don't look it up on the internet. They can. So we say, but what we do is say, oh, here's how we'll make this work. We'll, on Wednesday afternoons from 2:30 to 3, we'll let kids do that. And that's how we get the system to look like this. We make it fit our current system. That's referred to as sustaining innovation. These things we cut off, I refer to those as next practices. Those are things we can't see happening in our school. Like I was just talking to you about letting technology teach some of the basic skills. A lot of people will say, I don't want that to happen. Right? We need to get that to happen. The way innovation should work is you take the idea and you implement it in your school with fidelity. You make the school change to accept the new idea. This is referred as disruptive innovation. This is the work of Clay Christensen. You put the idea in with fidelity and you let the idea make the system change to accept it. That's where the future really rests. That's where innovation comes from. So leave that behind. Go to another set of skills. We all work hard in education to efficiently deliver the next thing that should be done. And the skill set we use for that is this skill set right here. This is how all of us were trained in education. It's called delivery skills. We analyze a problem. We do some planning. We collect all the detail. We build an implementation system. And we have disciplined execution. All that does is keep the current system the way it is. Those are the skills of somebody who only would work in best practices. You as a leader need to develop more transformative skills. So the transformative person incorporates skills from a very, very different dimension. They don't accept the status quo. This is things like Jeff Bezos, the late Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, who I work for. They don't accept the status quo. They look for new and different ways to do what we're doing. In education, we don't look for new and different ways. So if you look at these two, this slide, I talked about delivery skills. Do we question, look at the discovery skills, questioning. Do we question what we do? Like, why is it that we have kids sitting so much? There's 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids, we have them sit all day. They're not even designed for that. Why do we separate the subjects? Observe a school. Observe a school, sit at a school all day and watch one kid, what his life is like as he or she works and moves. Networking, we should be networking more. We should be experimenting, which is something a lot of educators would say, oh, we don't experiment with our kids. They experiment with human genes. They experiment all over. We need to be doing some experimenting. The other thing is we need to be doing some associational thinking. Some of you may not like this, but you know, instead of sometimes going to an education conference, Go to a different group. Go to a group that is totally different. Go to a community event instead of going to an education conference and listen to what they're talking about. Go to the fire department. Go to a conference on medicine and see what they're talking about. Get different ideas. Don't gather your ideas from always the same area. This is really important. So when I worked at the Gates Foundation, I'm going to give you this next set of skills. This is, I call it versioning. And so what I want you to understand about this specific skill is this, that people like, they wonder like, how did Microsoft get so wealthy? Well, Microsoft used this version skill, which is in 1995, they launched Windows 95. It wasn't really perfect. They knew it was good. They launched it, they listened to their customers, and they launched Windows 98. They launched it, listened to their customers, and launched Windows 2000. They launched it, listened to their customers, and launched XP, then Vista, then System 7, and on and on and on. The software business updates and fixes itself regularly. You see them all the time as updates. Software lives in a constant changing environment. Our schools need to be the same thing. So what we should be doing, if you have the opportunities, when you launch a new idea in your school, launch it for real. Launch version 1.0. Launch it, listen to the faculty, listen to the students, listen to the parents. Keep a list of ideas. Then launch 2.0 or 1.5. And just constantly build a system inside your building where people know that you're willing to change, that you listen to ideas and you're willing to change. And you'll create a culture just like the software system. That's the best way to do it. Don't have drafts. Don't have temporary ideas. Have real ideas. Launch them as versions. When you do that, you'll do two things. You'll create a culture of change, and you'll also create a culture of trust, where you'll be getting ideas and issues from people, and they'll know that you're listening to them. Very important. Last skill I'd love to give you, and then a closing message. Last skill is this one. You have to look at your challenges that come across your desk or that come to you as either special cause challenges or common cause challenges. And I learned this long ago from a really, really smart dairy farmer who was chairman of my school board when I was a principal. And he taught me special cause, common cause. Because we as leaders try to respond to everything that occurs. So let me give you an example. We should really only be dealing with common cause problems and not special cause. To give you an example, bus breaks down, kids are late. That's a special cause problem. You do not need to redo the entire transportation system because of that. Common cause problem. Here's one that's real and consistent across so many schools in this country. We have remediation programs that once a student gets into them, they never get out. It's common cause. They stay in that system. They never remediate. It's like a life sentence. It's happening all the time. That means that needs to be solved. A common cause problem is one that consistently emerges all the time. Those are the problems that you should be spending your time on. And if you looked at that tactical and adaptive framework I gave you, that's a tactical issue. We have got to fix that issue because it's going to surface all the time. So as issues come across your desk, you need to kind of cluster special cause. Not dramatic. Common cause, it continues to happen. You monitor common cause issues, you need to address those. So that's kind of the biggest part of this talk. And so as I close, I built a slide to really talk about educational leadership and really to get us to understand where we really need to focus our time and attention. So let me see if this makes sense to you all, and then we'll close this down, and I'll take some questions, and we'll wrap this thing up. Here's a look at leadership. So people talk about data, and as a leader, you need to be driven by data. Well, data gives us information, which is very important. When we take that information, if we synthesize it, that gives us some knowledge about your system. That's important. Knowledge. Take that information and knowledge and put it in front of somebody with experience, and we get some judgments that are being made about the school. That's a critical and very important way to look at this work. This is really where a lot of schools stop. But what I'm going to challenge you in a VUCA world to think about is this. If you have information from data and you've synthesized it, you have knowledge, and put it with your experience, you have judgment, the next thing you need to think about is intuition, hunches, ideas. This is where some of the best thinking comes from, because intuition will give you innovation. You don't get innovation from information, knowledge, and judgment, data synthesis, and experience, because what happens is this, is that if you think about, like, I think of Steve Jobs with the iPod. When he came up with the idea of the iPod, the Sony Walkman ruled the jogging world. That's how everybody listened to music. People said, the data, the analysis, and the judgment tells us we don't need another way to listen to music. Well, guess what? Steve Jobs' intuition was right. He innovated and created something significant. If you then take innovation and you add passion to it, this goes back to one of the very first slides I said. Be very clear about what you want to accomplish as a school. And I think deep down in the heart of most every educator and most every leader is they have a passion for our kids. They have a passion for listening to our kids. They have a passion for doing what's right for our kids. And so my next piece is that if you have all of what you see on the screen and you have passion, you take that passion, you allow a voice to occur. You allow students to have a voice, faculty to have a voice, parents to have a voice, leadership to have a voice. That top squared area right there is really the powerful leadership that's needed in our schools at a period of time that we would call living in a VUCA world. That's where we'll likely aim to get most of our success and most of our leadership success in the future. So with that, I want to kind of say to you all that I'd like to say thank you, and I'd like now to turn it back to Honor or somebody to give us some of the questions. If there's any questions, if somebody has something they want to say, be happy to share it.
So again, thank you. Yes, if you will use your question box to start typing in your questions. In the meantime, Ray, I have a question for you regarding the VUCA world, and I was just curious, what would be your top strategies that you would recommend for principals to use in a district system that is kind of resistant to change, you know? So maybe you have great ideas, but how would you work the system to get those things through?
One of the things that we need to come up with is we have most of our schools around the country and have these massive strategic plans, these big school improvement plans, and I don't believe that in a VUCA world, a world of constant change, first of all, I could tell you that institutions like Southern New Hampshire University, other forward-thinking organizations, what they have is a set of maybe three or four, I'm going to call them compass points, you need as a leader to pick. It's like, what is it that you want to accomplish in this school? What are the three most important things you will make all your decisions around? So if you really want to create learners for the 21st century, I hear people talking about that all the time. If you really do, if you want to put students at the center of the work and you want to honor, let's just say, honor everyone's voice, if those are your guiding points, then as issues come to you, you use those guiding points that maybe you and faculty come up with, three or four compass points. Compass points will take you to where you want to go. That's what you need to establish. Secondly, you need to be able to meet and have a sense of sharing any innovative ideas regularly with leadership that is up the scale, like superintendent's offices. You should have a folder. You should have a portfolio in your desk, on your desktop, that says, these are the ideas that I think are going to be absolute game changers for our school system. And I'm going to focus on these over the next several years, and I'm going to have a way of talking about how we're going to implement those. In addition to that kind of thinking, you need to realize that if you're going to climb Mount Everest, you don't take everyone. And in every one of your buildings, there's going to be three clusters. There's actually four clusters of educators in your building, but the last cluster I'm not going to talk about. I'm going to talk about the first three clusters in it. This is a, if I had access to it right now, I'd throw a slide that I have, which basically says, first of all, in every building, you're going to have people, if you have a great idea, you're going to have a group of people that every idea you raise, they want to, they agree with and they want to work on it. Those people only need, they have the mindset for change in your building. So those are the people that will first start out on any project that you want to implement. The second group of people are people that need to see a process. They have the mindset, but what's holding them back is they don't understand the process. So the way it works is the first group, the group that loves every idea, they start, they develop the process. Once they develop the process, that gets the second group of people engaged, because now we see the process and we think we can do this. The third group needs to see results and a process. So you get the first two groups working on, now that they've got the mindset and a process, they start getting results. Once they get results, they share the results, the process, and the mindset with that third group, and then you move that third group. The last group, which I would call the toxic group, they're never going to move. All right? So, but you need to think about transformation not as whole system immediately, whole school. It's going to happen over a period of time, different entry points for different groups of people. That's how you have to manage that. So you need to let, you know, leadership know that, that you understand and believe that. So that's one way you start to make this work happen in your building. Is that helpful?
Very much so. Thank you so much. Any other questions? Please write them in. We'll take a moment for that.
Yes, I have a question for Ray. Ray, with our new principals coming in, since it's National Principals Month, they struggle with doing transformation with their school because they're focused on test scores.
Yep.
And they can't adjust to the VUCA world because everything is all on improving test scores. So when you get a new principal on a new job and they're trying to force their staff to, hey, get into the curriculum, they got to improve test scores, how can we incorporate the VUCA?
Right, so I was expecting that question because that's the question. I appreciate your question as well as Honors. Those questions are critical. First of all, you have to understand something, and there's a lot of current research out there about test scores. And one of the things is there's this challenge which I think happens, which is, let me give you an example. When people hear thunder, they run. Thunder won't kill you. It's loud. But lightning will. Lightning is silent. Okay? So what you have to think about is this. Test scores are kind of like thunder. Right? When you hear that thunder, you see that thunder, should you respond to it? Yes, absolutely. But the response is not to look at that and look at those numbers, but get into the deeper part of that. Like, what is the school culture like? Do our students feel supported? Right? Because here's what we know. There's a bunch of research on happiness. Right? And if this should not surprise anybody. And you can look the research up. It's a guy by the name of Sean Aker at Harvard University. He talks about happiness. And the factor is it's about a third. So here's what, when you're happy, you're more likely to achieve. You're more likely to learn. Your brain is on fire when you're happy. When you're not happy, your brain almost shuts down. So you just think about your students and think about what we do to make them happy. Right? I'm going to tell you this. I interviewed over 1,000 kids when I was writing my book. And I had a lot of kids say to me, school is a place I go to every day when my deficits are accented. Why? Because we're focusing on test scores and achievement. We're not focusing on getting the student to really believe in themselves that they have a mindset for learning. So a lot of these kids that are not doing well on standardized assessments because school has never been good to them. We need to get them to understand that they are learners. So sit down with them. Ask them, what have they learned on their own? Get them to believe they're a learner. A lot of these kids, I've seen a kid, I saw a kid in L.A. about 4 months ago. I was with my friend Russ Paglia doing work, and this individual kid said we asked him what he did during the summer. He learned to throw a curveball. He watched about 500 video YouTubes to learn. He was excited about that. And so we said to him, you are a learner. You can learn. You know how to learn. One of the things we're not doing in school is teaching kids about learning. So I ask educators often, and at one of my keynotes recently, I asked educators, when did you learn how you learned? The sad thing is most people said it happened in college after freshman year. Wow. So from K to 12, we don't talk about learning. You talk about content, but we don't talk about learning. I indicated at the start of this talk, we're in the learning business, not the content business. We need to create learners. So we need to give kids a mindset that they're learning. So if you're a new principal, you're out there in the field right now, I think you bring your faculty together and you talk to them. First of all, you talk about when did you learn how you learned? See what they say. I'm going to bet that 90% of them learned to learn in college. A lot of them didn't even learn to learn until they were in graduate school. All right? We're in the learning business. And all we're doing is teaching, 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 and not talking about learning. We have to talk to our kids, how they learn. We ask them, how did you learn to throw a curveball? Well, I studied. What did you study? I studied these videos. I read an article by this. Oh, you have to, you visually do it. You did some reading. Then you practice. This is really good. Write down that kid's profile, how they learn. Then engage them with some content. What we do in education is we give them content and we tell them how they're going to learn it. That's not the way you live in the VUCA world. So if I was a beginning principal, I'd start talking about learning. Say, all of our kids know how they learn. Because here's the fact, and I'll stop with this. The fact is this. Children are born learners. From the time they're born till before they get to school, without taking one course, they learn to take incomprehensible sound and turn it into speech. They learn to walk, talk. They learn to read visual cues from people. They do a lot of things on their own. They're born learners. Then they come to school, we say, sit down, we're going to teach you something. We've never talked about learning. We've got to talk about learning. So if we're going to do what's right for these kids in the future, we're going to spend some time talking about learning. There's no better place, no better organization to begin to do it than NAESP. I really believe it needs to be the focus of our work in the future. We are in the learning business, not the teaching business.
Great. So,
Ray, we have one more question, last question. Catherine writes, how can transformation not be stagnated by compliance?
Well, because here's the thing. Great question, Catherine. Here's what I learned at the Gates Foundation. Policy is the last thing to change. You can't change policy unless you have a practice that chose to get results, then you change policy. Policy happens. I was commissioner in Vermont. I had the authority to waive any and all rules and regulations with the exception of health and safety, right? Because to get people to try some things. So in our schools, we need to be places that tinker on the edges of the, now I'm not saying like if you read an article that says, you know, if you hang kids upside down for an hour, blood goes to their head and they read better. I'm talking about things we know as educators that can improve learning. So what I would suggest, Catherine, is this. Is that don't view policy as the thing holding you in place. Policy is there for that first circle, which is the kind of like accomplishing what we're already doing. The transformation is we're going to have to play with the edges. So document some ideas you might have. Some teachers might come, you know, I have these kids, I have them with iPads, they're doing all this great work, I'd love to monitor it. So make a plan. Write down in Mrs. Jones's room, we're dealing with this idea, we're trying these ideas, we're collecting data, because we want to show our leadership in the district, we want to show our board that this is making a difference. When that starts to make a difference, it then informs policy, and policy will change. Without an informed practice that shows results, policy will not change. We can't let that stop us. That's why in the medical business, in any business, I'm driving a Tesla that has a beta version of self-driving. While I let that car drive by itself, they collect data and they keep collecting it, making it better and better and better. So that's what we have. We have to have that adventurous mindset. We have to experiment, we have to question, and we have to document these ideas and show results. That's my best suggestion for the time we have today. I just want to thank Catherine for her question. Be happy if you drop me an email. I'd be happy to set up a call, talk to you more about that.
Yes, Dr. McNulty's information is at the bottom of the screen. I'd like to thank you again for our first installment of our National Principles Month webinar series. I'd like to thank our Executive Director, Dr. Earl Prince, as well as our Associate Executive Director, Gail Morgan, for this opportunity. Again, I am Aaron Lurie, the Director of Professional Learning, and I thank you for listening to this webinar. Thanks, everybody.